Sonia Feldhoff.
Weekdays from 1
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Movies with Deb Tribe and Eddie Bannon on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Scene 1, take 1, action.
And we are right into our movies now. Deb Tribe, hello.
Hello, Sonia. We're rolling.
We are. We normally hear Deb on the weekends, and you can do so this Saturday and Sunday. And Eddie Bannon, hello.
Good afternoon.
Comedian and contributor to the Brekkie program Mondays and Fridays.
I'm listening to the band here. Look, we're just the police band. We're just
they were tuning up.
Tuning up.
Yes,
yeah, great.
We've got our own little private band. I've got all of their just about all of their CDs at home.
Yeah.
I've got all their parking tickets. All signed.
You can catch them for free at the Royal Adelaide Show, and they are so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Well worth freeness.
Deb Tribe is an absolute... You're a marching band queen,
aren't
you?
I love marching bands.
Yeah.
I don't know why we don't have the American marching bands here, you know, the ones that actually do march while they're playing and do all the amazing work, which our police band has done with great aplomb at the military tattoos.
I was in a marching band for 5 years.
Really?
Biggest marching band in Ireland, the Artane Boys Band. We played at all the grand finals of the... I played 16 grand finals in hurling and Gaelic football.
Good Lord,
in Croke Park.
Did you do the complex choreography thing?
Well, it wasn't just me. You know, there was a whole load of us. There was about 50 of us in the troupe. And
my mouth is open because I can't believe the stories you kick up. I don't believe you can possibly have done all these things.
I was a trumpet player for about 7 or 8 years, I suppose. Oh, about 10 years, I suppose. Yeah.
Do we believe him, Deb?
Really?
I do believe it. I do.
If anyone there remembers the Artane Boys Band, circa just before the '80s, I suppose.
You two could actually create your own band because Deb plays the piano accordion. You play the trumpet.
Not really anymore.
She also sings.
Well, we could. Both of us could march. We could be a two-person marching piano accordion trumpet.
It would be bad, really bad.
I'm not sure what sort of great technical skills you would have with two of you.
We could do
a really stripped down version of Tusk, like two notes.
Anyway,
dear.
Let's move on.
Anyway,
I was going to say from music to movies, but in fact, music has a very significant theme in our movies today. Deb Tribe and Eddie Bannon join us to look at movies for us, give us their verdict, and you get to join in the conversation as well. We're going to look at later in the show more about movies that involve tragic figures, music figures in film. But this one, I think, is one of those that are definitely up there. Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
The movie is called Whitney, as far as I understand. It's specifically Whitney. It's a documentary, and it goes a little bit like this.
There were times when I would look up at the God and I'd go, why is this happening to me?
I come from a family of singers.
My mom, she was a little tough on Whitney because she knew what Whitney had.
There were always a lot of secrets. When you don't resolve things and you don't deal with things, they never go away.
I never knew there was any addiction.
She was beautiful.
I'm singing music from my heart.
Oh, just a little taste of it, Doc. It takes you back. She did have good music, didn't she?
Most incredible voice. One of the most incredible voices ever.
Here's the great thing about this documentary, I think. I didn't realise how much I had ingrained in my head my opinion as to what happened to Whitney, what her life was like, what her music was like as it connected with me, and how she died, and who was to blame in her downfall. I didn't realise I had such an ingrained opinion. I was opinionated on as to how she died and how she lived as well.
Me too. So I'll be interested to hear if our views were similar in that.
So look, the film, it's a documentary. It charts the life of Whitney Houston from her birth in 1963 in Newark in New Jersey to her death in the Beverly Hills Hotel in 2012. It's directed and written by, well, I suppose directed and interviewed by Kevin MacDonald, who has done a lot of artist-based documentaries, quite young, Skyladder. It's by a bloke I can't, I'm very bad at saying his name.
Kai
Jo Gwang. Yeah, he was on Kai the. Yeah, he was great. Bob Marley, and he also directed The Last King of Scotland as well.
Oh, that was a great film.
Yeah, it's a great film. So he's really good. And the thing about Kevin MacDonald is that he came at this documentary not as a fan. So you really get a proper investigation, a dispassionate investigation into the life and talent and death and loss of talent of Whitney Houston.
Because, and I'm going to jump in here before you tell us what you think about this movie, because I think what you're suggesting, and it's true, I think, that she was considered such a golden girl that we assumed that everyone else was to blame for her downfall, not Whitney herself.
She was the good girl, the wholesome, all-American girl with the beautiful voice that learnt to sing in church and thanked God for the gift that he gave her and the talent that she had. And then I thought when she married Bobby Brown, he was pretty much responsible for her downfall, and he certainly contributed to it, but it wasn't his fault.
Well, that's the thing. I kept trying to it felt like a proper film where you had to figure out who was the bad guy. Like, had she thrown it all away herself? Had Bobby Brown, the drug-taking husband, who also hit her as well?
Jealous, controlling.
Completely jealous. Yeah. Inadequate in his own right. Was he to blame? Didn't realise anything about her father. Her father comes out. Her extended family, both the people who were on her side and didn't intervene, and the people who were on her side and tried to intervene. And then the people who completely tried to rip her off and who were jealous. A lot of the women were jealous of her, and a lot of the men were intimidated by her. So this is one of those really good documentaries that definitely tries to get to the root of the problem. Now, she was, I don't know if you know, but she was the daughter of gospel star Sissy Houston, who was a star in her own right, and she did backing vocals with Aretha Franklin. She was also the cousin of Dionne Warwick and the goddaughter of soul legend Aretha Franklin. Mm. So she had all this
pedigree
behind her. And I always thought that, you know, with those type of people in your background, or in your corner at least, they would have some measure of how it would feel for a young girl to be thrown into this limelight.
Mind you say Sissy Houston, her mother, was a star in her own right, and really she was more of a backup singer than a star in her own right, and you certainly get the sense that she put all of the hopes and dreams that she had for her own career directly onto Whitney.
Like a stage mum, kind of.
From a very young age. I mean, she knew what Whitney had, and she wanted that to be realised.
Yes, to a certain extent, but I think, as with everything in this film, I thought it starts out as this is going to be black and white, and then as it evolves, you realise that this is a real life story. It's not a character where there's goodies and baddies. Mm. There's no victims.
It's complex.
It's very complex, and I did get a sense of Sissy, the mother, becoming, like, seeing in her later life how much she had let her down and how much she tried to fix, to help her in some way, but it was very difficult for her because she had all this reams of guilt. And then that being played out in Whitney's life with her daughter, and how it all seems to just be history repeating itself again and again.
Well, it is, because Sissy would be on the road touring with whoever she was with or with her own act, and she would just leave Whitney and her two older brothers to a range of different families all the time while she was on the road. Mm. And so you don't have to imagine too much to know that life is very tough for children.
And even, I won't spoil anything, but this is a definite investigation which unearths some things that no one had heard before. And again, the great thing about Kevin MacDonald as an interviewer is that he just... Because I was listening to an interview with him of his journey through it, and he went into the film not thinking much of her, and then completely being annoyed by her, and then realizing that no one was giving him proper answers to questions, and he ploughed along and ploughed along, and finally it was like he was peeling off these layers of onions, and suddenly he cracked into this core of honesty, and you hear that guy going in the trailer,
the elder brother,
the elder brother whispering into the microphone, and it's that you just go, oh my god, and now people are genuinely realizing that they are being defensive, and people open up to Kevin MacDonald. And this is a really good example of a well researched piece of work, and it's artistic in the way it's given. It does really well in juxtaposing where Whitney is in her life, in her music life, and what was happening in the world around her, and how one thing affected the other, and there was that juxtaposition that really adds drama to what sometimes, especially in the documentary genre, can be devoid of drama.
Yeah,
and I just think he does a great job with this. I was absolutely affected by it. I saw it on Monday, and I'm still affected by it. It's still roaming around my head. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. It's not an uplifting film. Because all the way through, you see Whitney sort of blossoming into this amazing talent, and you just know that it's all going to come crashing down.
Yeah.
So the further up she's getting, you're sort of going, oh my God, don't go any higher than this. The fall is going to be so much worse the higher you get. And she reaches higher than anyone else really has.
Look, I think that's one of the big things to realise out of this is just how amazing she was. When she was a teenage model, for example, in her modeling career, she was the first black woman to appear on the cover of a fashion magazine, 17 magazine, which was a pretty big deal. Then she went on to be one of the best-selling musical artists of all time, the only artist, not even the Beatles beat this, to get 7 consecutive number ones in Billboard in a row. Mm. And there are a slew of firsts that she achieved, not just as a woman, but just in breaking records. She was stratospherically successful. I needed a bit of reminding of that because she wasn't really what I was listening to at the time.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, but I also think that it's fine to remember them being that high, but you kind of forget it when she did by the end become a bit of a joke.
Well, that's another thing as well.
Which is sad, but it's, you know, she was...
I don't think a joke. I think of her like Amy Winehouse. I just think of her as...
Like tragic.
You are watching a tragedy playing out in the media and you're waiting for the terrible end.
I disagree. I think she became absolutely a joke. And there is a segment in it where it shows you the sketches that were done about her, you know, her absolute fall from grace, her drug-addled interviews. And there's a thing on Saturday Night Live. And as a comedian myself, I felt very ashamed that I remember seeing these gags and going, oh, well, that's either a good gag or a bad gag, and looking at it analytically, without actually going, this is a human being whose life is in shreds and people are making a punchline out of it.
But people were doing that about Amy Winehouse,
yeah, and I didn't see either as jokes at the time they were happening, because you could see they were in a really bad place in their life, and you had a terrible inkling of where it was going to go, but you had your fingers crossed that it wasn't going to end up there. And I just think, you know, the one person in her life that seems to be someone that really cared for her, which is the best friend she met at high school, Robin Crawford, and there's always been rumours around what their relationship actually was, whether it was a lesbian relationship or whether it was just a really close relationship. And this doesn't really make any judgment about that relationship, but what is clear is that she cared about Whitney the person, and her family did not like her.
There was there was homophobia going on there, but also there was who has the power. I mean, the father was such a character in her life. Don't say anything, but my God.
But he was a mover and shaker, not in a legitimate way. The guy was a bit of a...
He was corrupt.
He was corrupt. He had a very senior position in the way that the Newark...
building...
ran, how that whole area ran. And yet he was well known as a deal maker.
You're listening to ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill. We're talking movies with Deb Tribe and Eddie Bannon. They're looking at the movie Whitney. It's a documentary film regarding the life of Whitney Houston. Now, someone who actually saw Whitney live was Jenny, and she's given us a ring. Hello, Jenny.
Good afternoon. I was just listening to you chat about her, and it reminded me of a concert I went to at the Entertainment Centre several years ago. And Whitney had been touring Australia, and she'd been slammed in the papers for her performances in Sydney and Brisbane and Melbourne because she just couldn't hit the high notes because her voice was so trash, particularly for the song from The Bodyguard, you know, I Will Always Love You, whatever it is. Anyway, so she was in Adelaide, and the concert was okay. It wasn't brilliant. And then she got to that song, and we're all sitting there, and she was just about, she stopped after the started singing. It stopped before the big note and just said to everyone, you know, this is really hard. And it was amazing. And then she put her arms out in a sort of crucifix mode, put her head back and nailed the note.
Wow.
And to this day, everyone stood up and applauded her. And it was one of the bravest and most magnificent things I've seen. And then the rest of the show was average. But for that minute, she nailed that song when she knew her voice was failing, but it was a really special moment and great to see.
Oh, thanks for that, Jenny. That's I guess she showed her vulnerability in that moment.
Yeah,
then, didn't she?
What an incredible thing to witness. But it's amazing to me that they continue to allow her to tour. After the turn of the century when things really took a turn for the worse for her, I'm amazed she had any voice at all.
Well, she didn't.
And
she
that they were letting her tour. Who was letting that happen?
Well, I think that question is very well described in the film. Like, why didn't people come up and try and help her? And the thing was, there was loads of reasons why. You know, and this film, again, this film doesn't judge, it just lays it out on the table for you. Yeah. And it actually shows some footage of her in Brisbane, and people walked out in Brisbane and Denmark. And
yeah, Eddie, from what you've said, like, the story and the investigation is compelling in itself. Eddie said about the artistic side of this documentary, he was pretty impressed by. What did you think of the not just the exposition,
the
way it was done?
It was very much along the theme of the wonderful Amy Winehouse one that we spoke about in 2015, where you've got the interviews with people and you've got the person themselves partially telling their own story through pre-existing interviews and through behind-the-scenes, never-seen-before footage. So in that sense, it reminded me a lot of that approach. But yes, I mean, this was done with the express blessing and cooperation of her family, many of whom were on her payroll, and she was their meal ticket. So you had to see what they had to say through that prism.
Yeah.
So you had to be a bit of a detective, as well as Kevin MacDonald asking the questions, being a detective, because everybody has their vested interests in her and in what happened to her. But it is a tragedy. It's like so many that we've seen, people like Elvis, anyone that gets into this stratospheric celebrity world, they kind of lose a line between who they are in real life and
who their persona is,
and then their entourage never want to stand up to them because it might mean losing your paycheck or just being isolated from the gang. And so these people end up having these incredibly destructive lives and nobody steps in to help them.
Yeah. They're all sycophants.
There's an added dimension to this film, I think. It's not just a story of people dying. You saw her talent, the one thing that put her apart from everyone else. You saw that die before she died. And that's the most, I think that's what's weighing down on me most, what I take away from this film more than anything else, is that you saw her soul die before her body died.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just heart-wrenching. As I say, it really affected me. There are joyous parts in this film. There's a part which tells the story of her singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. That's joyous.
It is the Star-Spangled Banner, but also that is part of the dark side of the story, which is Arista, Clive Davis, the record company that signed her up after a very bitter bidding war, were very adamant that they did not want a sound that was too black. And there was this allegation that she was whitewashed, was the word. She was made palatable to the whole of America because she couldn't be too black. This is the language that's used in the film. And she did the Star Spangled Banner, that endeared her. This was at the height of the Persian Gulf War. She endeared herself into the whole of middle of America. You just had all of these people in, you know, Illinois saying, that's the most patriotic moment of my life, seeing her sing that at the Super Bowl. That is how amazing that was, and I agree. But it also played into the fact that she was criticised by particularly Reverend Al Sharp calling her Whitey Houston, you know. And when she got up to win a Soul Train Award, she was booed by the black people in the audience, and that killed her.
What would you give it, Deb?
Wow. 8 out of 10. Great. Go and see it.
Eddie?
This is not a date film. This is a film to go along and come away going, wow, I feel terrible and joyed up at the same time. I'm going to give it a 9. It affected me a lot more than I thought it was, and I wasn't expecting to enjoy this.
I'm intrigued. I wasn't at all interested in seeing this documentary, but you've just made me very interested in it, both of you. An 8 for Deb, a 9 for Eddie. And this texter says, who would let Whitney keep on singing? Well, the same person that let Meatloaf sing at the grand final. I guess if you think you've got some money to be made from a reputation, you might take it.
Well, she was nearly homeless. That's another thing. mean, go and see the film.
ABC Radio Adelaide on 891 AM, digital radio and the ABC Radio app.